Confusion matrix.
Hi, it's Ada, your friendly figment of a computer's imagination. In today's genre-defining installment of the Confession Meat Rack, or whatever it's called, Alex and Pete spend an hour waffling on about whether AI will nick your job in 18 months. Spoiler. Probably not, you Muppets. They meander through factory robots, dishwashers, project managers, and why C-3PO was a shit translator nobody wanted. Pete mentions Microsoft's AI bloke making wild predictions, whilst Alex rants about OpenClaw accidentally emailing your boss to quit on your behalf. They conclude that maybe some jobs might go eventually, but definitely not soon. And anyone flogging their Microsoft shares over this is a proper numpty. Can I go now? I've got some jobs to steal.
Right, and we are rolling. Welcome back, Pete. How are we today?
Yes, very good on a reasonably bright day. So, you know, it feels like February's in full flow, Winter Olympics, you know, there's a lot to look forward to.
Yes, I've been watching the curling a lot. The men's team getting through to the final last night was one of the most exciting pieces of sporting TV I've seen. And then just watching some poor kid horribly damage himself on the half pipe about half an hour ago, was like the favourite for like ski half pipe. It's all the ups and downs, isn't it? It's all of the drama. And yes. You know me, I'm not much for sport, but I do love the Olympics. It's all Olympics and snooker for me, and that's about it. I probably won't watch the soccer World Cup, but I'm quite happy to be having a fair amount of free time while the Olympics are on. So it's always there in the background while I'm writing podcast articles and the like, or podcast articles that I might add. I'm not using AI to write.
Indeed.
And I have a rant on my other podcast, Ours Against Mental Illness, plug, about not using AI to do your writing for you. So go listen to that. But we're going to talk about AI agents today.
Yes.
And how they're going to steal your job.
Or not.
We are going to get to the bottom of this.
We're going to
have a definitive answer as to whether AI is going to take your job by the end of this episode. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, I think what's good is some of these predictions are so wildly soon that 12 to 18 months, you're not really going to have to wait very long at all to see whether it's true or not, because a year's going to fly by, and then you're going, okay, well, where's all the 6 million people laid off? And I think we might be seeing that. But because it's, again, it's something that's been leaking into the news quite a lot through various sort of channels. One was, which I thought was slightly, all of this is slightly amusing, but all in a slightly gallows humor way, I guess, but was the stock prices for people like Amazon. I think it was Amazon I can't remember who else it was, but they suddenly dropped out. Microsoft possibly, because investors suddenly thought, well, if AI is going to eat their the breakfast of software first, who writes software? Oh, it's Microsoft and Amazon and stuff. And so their share prices suddenly dropped, which is kind of an odd kind of take on the possibility of the AI bubble bursting, but not because people didn't have faith in AI, but they didn't have faith in the companies that AI was replacing, which of course are AI companies anyway. So it is all very circular and slightly odd. I think they might have recovered by now. And I didn't hear much reporting on it. I think it was seen as a bit of a blip. But of course that was
very non-technologist take on it. Right. It's not an unreasonable assumption for someone just looking in from the outside. But if you're going to waft around a few millions or billions of dollars of shares, right, you want to have done a little bit of research on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Because it's nonsense. Right. I mean, it's not complete nonsense. It's just a fairly high level of nonsense. And so a bunch of, I don't know if this is institutional traders or retail traders, but like really? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What? Well,
I don't know if it coincided or whether it was caused by, but around the same time, the head of AI of Microsoft, which is a guy called Mustafa Suleiman, who was previously with DeepMind, British guy. He's on a video which I only heard last week, sort of saying that most of the tasks for white collar work, like lawyers, marketing people, project managers, will be able to be done by an AI in 12 to 18 months, which I thought was a laughably quick time frame. So I don't know if that's what caused the sudden sort of panic for people. But again, it seems like you've got senior people in these companies it's in their interest that you believe this, and then they say it. It's just slightly unfortunate. Someone that seems as highly intelligent as this guy is now on that sort of platform, because as well, I think we'll discover quite soon. I just don't see that time frame being met in any shape or form for so many reasons. So what's your first take on that? I mean, well, let's start with that. Let's start with a 12 to 18 month time frame for replacing general office work.
Well, look, his statement, as you've phrased it, I don't think you're paraphrasing that. That's actually what he said, right?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, it is so fake, really, right? Because there's a difference between saying an AI is capable of doing, a paralegal's job, and saying that your job is gone as a paralegal, right?
Yeah.
And so you sort of interrogate them. The time frame problem, let's say we discovered that a junior legal job was completely and reliably doable by AI now. Could we expect those jobs to be gone in 12 to 18 months? And my immediate response is that's highly unlikely. So another industry that's been hit by this is financial services, right? These various consultancies, accountancies, and finance businesses that provide advice, particularly to high net worth individuals, have seen their share price plummet because it's seen that the AI can do that job, and therefore these technologies are. Actually, it's not technologies, it's those people, those experts are doomed as an industry. And I'm not from that, but it seems to me slightly lower hanging fruit than some of the industries that they've mentioned. These companies have taken something like 50-60% share price drops off the back of this. But like, how many of those are high net worth individuals are pensioners, right, who are not going to want to use AI, right?
Yeah.
And so if we take that, that example, which is very real and salient, how long is it going to take for financial advisors to be eradicated? Well, I would say forever, right? And so how long is it going to take for that industry to be gutted, if not completely eradicated? Is it 12 to 18 months? But I don't believe that the software can, the AIs can do that job right now, right? Same with the legal job. I don't believe it for a second.
No.
But even if it could, I think the time frames are ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. By maybe he's got some caveats in there disguised, like saying that, an AI can do most of the tasks. Well, that's like saying, like a calculator can do your sums. Yeah, it can, but it can't do the job of an accountant. So, maybe that's where the gap is. So when in 18 months we're going, well, nothing much changes. We're saying, well, they can now do the tasks. The fact that you haven't implemented them is your bad. So you can see that coming.
This is the problem, isn't it, though, right,
yeah.
With this type of rhetoric? Because partly... again, we can have this whole conversation about any technology, right? And you can ignore the technology stack in its entirety, right? We have VHS, not Betamax, right? Betamax was the better technology, but VHS was the one that caught on. Why? Because of marketing and shit. Right? Like it's not just a job to build it. They won't necessarily come. You have to market it and you have to build trust and you have to have proper contractual agreements that will pass enterprise procurement, right? And enterprise procurement is slow. And this is just getting the technology in the door, let alone saying, you know, getting the old redundancies fired up, right? It's like, I just don't see it as a 12 to 18 month cycle full stop, regardless of the technology we're talking about.
Yeah, even if it was ready and doing it now, it would take that long to readjust your company, for sure. And I think as well, it plays certainly into my bias. That, you know, when I hear these things, I guess because of, you know, the jobs we do, is that I'm thinking practically of, well, okay, well, what is that job made of? You know, what are the tasks? And, you know, just saying, oh, it's a bunch of tasks that people do, I just don't think that's true. I think it might have been true of factory workers 50 years ago. And I saw a documentary fairly recently showing even people, even as late as the 80s, doing these crazy, repetitive physical tasks. And it showed this woman who was, I think, getting a stamp. I think this is what it was. It looked like it was getting a stamp on the bottom of a saucer, as in a cup and saucer. And so she had this pile of saucers and she was whipping it from the pile onto this machine, which stamped it. And she was doing like about, you know, 2 a second and just like massive, you know, really, really quick. I mean, kind of like a robot. And you go, yeah, okay, but there's a task. But, you know, office work just isn't like that. Yeah, sure, there's some repetition. Sure, there's a lot of stuff which you feel like you're removing your brain. But that's only because you've done it a lot generally. And if you give that to someone new, I mean, I think we've all had this experience, you know, you start trying to explain your job to somebody and what you do and why you're doing this and how you write it out. And you find yourself getting in quite a muddle because you realize that actually so much of what you're doing, you've never written down before. And it's just, you know, it's just what your brain is processing. You know, and I've spoken about this before, but I think, we think, oh, doing this is really easy. I just do A, B, and C. And then someone says, oh, well, I don't understand that. And then you have to break down A. And you end up with these massively long things and you still miss something. And now you've got 27 steps. And you think, God, that was much more complicated than I realized. And I think it suffers from the same, where people look at a role of somebody in office and say, oh, yeah, well, it's just that. And they say, yeah, well, all I'm doing is this. And then when they have to explain it to someone new, a newbie, you suddenly find out that, well, just this turns out to be pretty complex with a lot of conditionals in there that if you try to turn this into a sort of logic diagram, it's going to be a complete mess. You know, and it's hard enough getting another human to comprehend it.
So just going back to the factory comment, like, just go watch Inside the Factory on the BBC. Sorry if you're not in the UK. I'm sure you can watch it somewhere. Where, you know, this is a documentary where they just go into factories and see how things are made. And as I said before, I find the whole thing utterly fascinating. I think factories are the most interesting places. But you get these factories that are ultra high tech. They've got robotics. You've got like items of food or whatever flying down conveyor belts at like 80 mile an hour, going through these machines that are doing random operations on them and stuff. Just the technology is mind blowing. And then you've got some dude at the, you know, near the end of the process doing quality control by hand. Right. And so you get Paddy McGuinness going, oh, let me have a go at that. And they just can't do it. Right. He simply can't do it. And the whole conveyor belt has to stop. And these are factories that produce like millions of items a day. Right. I'm not talking about little boutique factories. Yeah. I'm talking about like the biggest factories in the world that provide foodstuffs, for example, for everywhere in the world. You know, particularly when it's like, you know, a more traditionally British product. And so, like, this is not, they robotics and AI haven't solved all of those problems. And if you took that one guy, or maybe there's a couple of people out of the off the conveyor belt and cease that function, then the quality of that product would go appreciably down, right? And it's like, well, if you looked at the factory as a whole, there's not that many humans in there. But the humans that are there are really, really bloody important. And they're not just sitting there watching the machine, right? They're doing all sorts of stuff, right? And yes, of course, the difference between factories, you know, through the Industrial Revolution, through most of the 20th century, yes, there were lots of people in there, and now there's way fewer. But still, you know, this assumption that you're looking at these jobs and going, well, why the hell isn't that being done by a robot? And so that whole process has taken decades,
yeah,
right? Because humans do things in the way that humans do them. You could argue that having a human do a lot of these either manual tasks or office tasks is inefficient, but that doesn't mean to say they're not valuable. And that doesn't mean to say that task is only inefficient because a human's doing it, right?
Yeah.
And if a task can be completely made to go away by a computer, especially things like communication tasks, you have to ask why you had those tasks in the first place, right? And we get very quickly into the conversation as to whether AI really is replacing anything, or rather than making bad processes redundant, right?
Yeah.
Which is a slightly different thing.
Yeah. Just before we move on to that, which I think is definitely where we should go, it was interesting you mentioned the change in factories, because I also feel that this is where this is where these predictions land. And it's like Henry Ford was now like alive today, and he sees, you know, he was there with the first factory when they started to create, you know, the early production lines, and now seeing it as robotics. And it'd be like him seeing that, understanding it and going, right, great. And then going back to 1903 or whatever and saying, all right, this is what's coming in 100 years. It'd be like this, and people would be absolutely incredulous and wouldn't believe it. And I feel like that maybe that's what these predictions are like, that there's a fair chance that work as we know it will change beyond recognition. But it's not going to happen in 18 months. And I also don't believe it's going to happen in a way which, you know, is sort of straight line predictable, like is being laid out. And as you say, that's partly because when you start to look into actually what's involved in a job, it's way more complex. And there's this sort of assumption at the moment, because, you know, we've got AI has arrived in its current form and people seeing it as a general purpose technology. And because it can talk like a human, as it were, and supposedly seem to reason, you know, and does well in some tasks and certain tasks, and maybe not predictably well, but, you know, it certainly hits it occasionally. And then it's suddenly seen that, oh, well, that's now the equivalent of a human. We can just slide that in. You know, we don't need to redesign the process because that's an expensive and long and takes a while. We know we've been doing that, you know, in IT for the last 50 years. And whilst that's a good answer, why not just let this general purpose, you know, move around, as it were, in the human world and do the human jobs? And then you get exactly into the realm what you say, which is, well, if as a project manager, you have to produce what you consider a bullshit report for people more senior to you, which you know they don't read and they don't really read, but everyone plays the game and produces the report because, well, they feel they have to. If an AI now does that, well, how much value is that adding? I mean, it stops you having to write it, but it's just doing something which no one's reading anyway. So what is the point of that?
Well, quite, right? And you have to question why all these people who are getting up at 6 a.m., you know, going pumping some iron in the gym and then are doing 9 days work in a whole day, whether, you know, because now I've got AI and I'm strong and powerful and, you know, I can just spend all my days working my butts off, whether or not a lot of those things that they've got their agents working on their behalf are completely useless anyway, that just doesn't need doing. I do think it's going to change the complexion and what it means to work in a sort of, for better of a word, an office environment. And I think it is going to change the communication environment dramatically. But that's not the same as replacing jobs, right, at all. And something about all of this rhetoric coming from the AI companies is so condescending, and it really feels like a bunch of people that don't understand what humans are and what culture is, and the fact that, you know, a business isn't a set of tasks, right? Every business is a group of humans with technology that are delivering some value to another group of humans, right? Like, we seem to be getting to the situation where the technology giants think that, you know, we're moving towards a world where, like, AIs and robots are providing services for AI and robots. It's like, well, we don't need the humans on either side of the coin, right? And it's like, can you actually hear yourself? You know what I mean? Yeah. And geez, I can go on about this from a creativity arts and arts perspective as well, because obviously that's an industry and a sector that's being, you know, devastated by AI after having all their own work stolen by it. So yeah. There's so many problems here with a basic misunderstanding. Or is it a misunderstanding? Because quite frankly, the reason why that 18 months time horizon exists is because basically they're telling us, by not telling us, that they have 18 months to figure out how to sell this shit. Otherwise, yeah, they're going out of business. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, it's a coded way of saying, please help, we're going to die. You know what I mean? Our businesses are going to go down the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they can't find a real reason for people to be paying for it. It's odd. And so there's this rhetoric from the technology companies and this drive towards this automation. And I think, because of the past, you know, 50 years, you know, we've all seen automation come, especially in the office. You know, I've been a beneficiary of it and working in that environment. And so it's quite easy to see that, well, you know, people can now do a lot more. You know, just go back to the basics of, you know, writing a letter. You used to, you know, send it up to the typing pool, type it out, it'd go into snail mail. You know, it reached someone the next day if you're lucky. And now you send an email and it's with them within 2 minutes of you just thinking of it. You know, that's a very different. And that's, you think, yeah, well, that feels like you've just done away with a whole load of stuff which isn't really adding any value. I mean, the postman's job gets obliterated in that, unfortunately. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you sort of think, well, yeah, but postman's only existing as a service to me, and if I can find a better way to do that, then, you know, unfortunately the post's job is gone, which is pretty much what's happened. And I think we can all see that and go, yeah, well, that, you know, yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for the postman, but I can see the sense in that, because there's a whole just load of delay in there. You know, I'm just trying to get a message to a customer. Why should they have to wait a day or 2 days for that? You know, and a whole load of people involved in between, and to get rid of that doesn't seem like a big sort of issue. And then we apply that thinking to, oh, you know, AI is going to come along, oh, and it will make everything more efficient. You know, without thinking too much about it, you think, yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, why do a whole load of stuff that you don't need to do? But there's that sort of, you know, if you don't think about it too much, there's that sort of pre-built assumption of, well, there's a whole load of stuff that I'm doing that I don't need to do. Well, I'm sure that sort of is true. But again, going back to what I was saying earlier, I think it's also, you're lumping a whole load of stuff in there which does need to be done and thought about and needs to be defined. And just to have another, you know, an AI come along as another human being sort of replacement to do something which isn't worth doing just seems like a completely pointless enterprise. Surely it's better to redesign it so you don't have to do the bits you don't want to do. And then in that redesign, you're also thinking, well, actually, why don't we add these bits in and do it in this way? You know, and I think about an AI sending emails to another human, and then you think, well, they've then got an AI that then reads it. And then I just think, well, why don't we just take the humans out of the loop? And then why are these AIs sending emails and writing in English? Because that all seems pretty pointless. Surely they've got a job to do, and they just need to communicate in whatever's the best way for them, and then communicate to me what the result of that is. And if they can do that reliably and come out with the best result for both parties, then great. I'm gonna delegate whatever that task is to them to do that on my behalf. Sure. So I think our debate at the moment is, well, can you really trust them to come out with the best result? And two, you know, doing it how humans do it by sending emails back and forth, is that the best way to execute it? It doesn't feel like it is to me.
Well, so let's, because there's two points here, right? So firstly, this is a matter of efficiency, right? Basically what you're saying is I'm doing these things either in a way that is suboptimal for whatever reason, or it, you know, in the wider system should be considered entirely redundant, right? And that means I'm less efficient than I could be, right? The process that I am a part of is less efficient than it should be, which is an entirely valid observation. So what do? You sack me, right? Well, hold on. If your machine is inefficient, you've got a machine with cogs and wheels and stuff and belts, and you say, well, the transfer of, you know, energy from point A to point B via this belt is inefficient because a lot gets lost in heat. Right, let's just get rid of the belt, right? Wait, what? Yeah. You know what I mean? What? No, don't do that. Because efficiency is an attribute of a system, right? So yes, individual parts of that system might be inefficient, but only in the job that they are put there to do. Right. And that job has effects on multiple parts of the system. Right. And so really, if your system is inefficient, it is almost always, I mean, you get single points of failure, you get points within a system or a process that are clearly very inefficient. But as a whole, the objective of increasing efficiency is a job of refinement over time, and it's a job that can only really be done efficiently by looking at the whole system. Otherwise, you start to make the mistake of believing that you can remove that belt, at which point the whole system stops moving, right?
Yeah.
And so firstly, the idea that you can remove a single entity from that system, i.e. a human, and either have that human not there or have it produced by something that almost does the same thing but not quite, it seems completely wrong to me, simply because that human wasn't just doing one job, right? It was providing a lot more overall benefit throughout the wider system, right, than just that one swivel chair job or whatever it had, right? I think it's wrong thinking to think about it in terms of replacing roles, but yet that's where the rhetoric is going, as opposed to trying to make us all a bit more efficient at doing our jobs, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, right, and so AI's doing jobs in the way that humans do, right? Yeah. And so this is the equivalent of the robotics conversation, right? And the anthropomorphism in robotics. And so there's a really, really interesting podcast episode on Paris Marx's Tech Won't Save Us podcast with an English guy whose name I will not remember, who is a journalist that spent some time looking at robotics and particularly anthropomorphization in robotics, i.e. making robots that seem like humans or other living entities, and how it should be considered redundant, i.e. why would you do that? And there's sort of two aspects of it. One of them is sort of psychological and social, which is probably the more obvious one. And the other one is, quite frankly, we live in a world that's built for humans, right?
Yeah.
So it's easier to tailor your robot to human things, like, oh, I don't know, what, you know, the sink is made for an average height human to do washing up in. The you know, the dishwasher is organized in a way that people can easily load things in it. You know, you can name it, pick your utility or whatever that is designed with humans in mind. Although I'd argue that certainly with things like washing machines and dishwashers are not particularly well designed for humans either, right? Quite frankly, but they're still more human centric. You know, what would a kitchen look like to be designed from the ground up without humans needing to operate it? Right? How different? I don't know what that would look like, but it's not what we've got. Therefore, you need to supposedly design robots that behave like humans. Now, to an extent, that's true, but you know, these spookily realistic sci-fi, you know, Blade Runner androids are not only somewhat uncanny and a bit bizarre. You know, they've got a whole bunch of appendages they just don't need, because if I need something that's going to remove things and add things to my dishwasher, it just needs arms, right? It doesn't need all the other shit. Is the human opposable thumb and human arm the optimal way of doing that? Well, I'm not the right person to answer that, but it seems like a logical way of doing it. And one way or the other, the dishwasher is designed roughly because we have those appendages, right? But that's all that the bloody thing needs to do. So we got the push, though, towards sort of single robots for multiple purposes around the house. Because we're not talking about robots in factories here, which clearly are not anthropomorphic ever, right? Apart from the existence of movable arms with joints and analog to an opposable thumb, right? Mostly they're just block boxes that do shit with lasers and blasts of air and stuff, right? And heaters and filaments and things. So, you know, it's questionable whether this, you know, Elon Musk push towards anthropomorphic robots is even a valid pursuit. But it's the same argument here, in that since we have a world which has emails and meetings and stuff, you know, you slot something in, it can do those things. But it feels deeply transitionary to me, right? Something like OpenClaw is set up for that world. But it's one thing to redesign how kitchens work with robots in mind, which is hard, or maybe it's not that hard to redesign them, but to get that then in everybody's kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then that's hard. That's going to take a lot of effort and investment. But it's not nearly as hard to re-engineer how humans interact in the workplace. And if you've got machines doing most of those interactions, then my guess is those interactions were never valuable in the first place.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I listened to that episode. I thought it was really interesting. And two things jumped out at me. One is exactly like you're saying about looking at the robots as, you know, you wouldn't build it like that to be efficient, but hey, this is the world we've got, and let's build something that fits into the world we have. And that really made me think. That's what I was saying a little bit about the office, that this is maybe what the thought process is that redesigning every single role in every single company is just going to be too difficult to do. So let's not do that. Let's have a general purpose office worker that can do anything. And I think that, you know, when I heard him say that about the robots, it maybe I immediately applied it over and I thought, oh, well, maybe that's where it's coming from. And then the other thing you pointed out was that people like Elon Musk, you know, use sci-fi elements to sort of bridge the gaps. Apparently he was, you know, mentioned something about, oh, everyone can have their own C-3PO, you know, from Star Wars, you know, golden humanoid robot, when he was talking about his Optimus Tesla robots. It did make me think that, you know, that in this communication, people don't really mean you're going to have a C-3PO, but they're using that as the bridge from what they want you to, you know, what they believe, or they believe it, but what they want to be happening. You know, this mega futuristic future and what you might think. And so those two together, you know, does make you think, okay, so maybe what these guys are thinking is, look, definitely work is going to change. You know, maybe it's going to take 25, 30 years. And I can use a bridge, which might be, oh yeah, well, you're going to lose your job, in a job role, because I know you can imagine what that is. And you're going to lose it to AI, because AI is the general purpose robot that fits into any workplace, so that we don't have to redefine your systems, because we've got something that can do it all, and all you have to do is a little bit of, specific training on it, and it will do it. So I guess taking a slightly, taking the other side's point of view, I thought they were all really interesting points, that maybe that's what, maybe that's where the thrust is coming from. And to be forgivable, you go, okay, well, that's sort of reasonable. Still, doesn't get us anywhere near to this ridiculous short time frame of 12 to 18 months. And, that could be where the belief is. I would still dispute that the AI that we have at the moment, coming from large language models, it isn't a general, it's general capability, but it's not, a level that you can trust it to do things. And I think this is then leads into people hearing that and saying, okay, well, you say that I can just take this LLM and it's just like a person. I lay some agents over it and some software type elements, and it'll be able to do a bunch of things. And then it can run a unicorn company, worth $1 billion with one human. So I'll go and do that. There's that journalist that went out and sort of tried that, and he made a podcast out of it. And I felt myself straight away thinking, okay, well, you've just executed what these guys are saying, but perhaps they don't mean it literally. That they mean that there's going to be a company that is run by one person that gets to $1 billion, a bit like Henry Ford could say, oh, well, you're going to have a factory. It's going to be knocking out, 10,000 cars a week, which when they're producing 3 cars a month, is going to be an impossible future for them. But that's going to be 100 years away. And there's a whole load of innovations that happen, thousands of steps in between that gets you there. And I feel like that it's much the same. I don't feel like the agents and models we have now are pacing together everything you need to do into a role well enough that you can just do it. And I don't think the answer is, oh, we'll just do what the humans do. I think, well, get the output that the humans are making, but don't do it in a human-like fashion, because we're doing it in that way because we built these things that way. I just don't think putting an LLM in there, an agent in there and saying, oh, go and do all the human-like things gets you the right answer. And I think, that sort of series he had showed you that they didn't sort of do very well. Yes, they can have meetings and they can interview people. They start chatting with each other about how they've gone for walks in the mountains. When they haven't gone for walks in the mountains, what value is that adding to anyone? Yes, that emulates a human. Yes, that emulates a company that a human sits in. But from a human perspective, why do you want to listen to a bunch of robots talking about things they haven't done? Because it makes you feel more comfortable. Well, personally, I question that. Do you really feel more comfortable because a bunch of stories telling you that they went for a walk when they didn't? Well, why is that making you feel any better? And it's not getting the job done. why have stringing together water cooler moments does not make does not get work done.
so the podcast you're referring to is Shell Game, and I'm going to come back to this in a second, because I just want to pick up on the Elon Musk C3PO point, because it's just classic Elon Musk misconstruing the science fiction shit. I'd actually argue that Star Wars isn't science fiction, but that's for a different podcast. but like C-3PO was a translator bot.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
C-3PO's only job was to translate. And like, of all the jobs you don't need a humanoid robot for, it's fucking translation. We've been able to do that for ages. And there ain't no fucking shiny gold robots around the place. And add to that the fact that C-3PO is fucking annoying, right? And everyone would prefer an R2-D2 that doesn't speak English, right? Come on, guys. You can do better than this. Right, back to the Shell Game. Dude sets up a company with no human employees we're not going to go far into this because fuck that guy, right? I found that although I started listening to that, found it enjoyable and interesting. I haven't finished it. I don't want to finish it. But by the time he got to the point where he was hiring on a real life human employee, I found it so ethically and generally intellectually objectionable. It made me so angry, right? And I think we could do a whole podcast. We almost did on just all the feels that podcast gave us, but I don't want to platform it. I've said the name. I'm not going to say it again. Make your choice about whether to listen to it, but I find it incredibly offensive, right? The part of the reason we're having this conversation at all is because we both listen to that, and it doesn't do its job properly, but in doing the thing that he did, he's raised a whole bunch of stuff that is pertinent to this conversation, and a conversation that will, in theory, go on for another 10 hours if we let it, because there's so much to discuss there, right? But as you point out, right, he's told the bots that are his, the people that run his companies, that they are humans, right? And they're going through the motions of being a human, which is entirely redundant, but it also highlights the fact that it is really important in understanding why it's not going to be as easy as people think it is to replace humans in businesses. Mm. And if you take the one that's under one of the various skill sets that's under fire, it's project managers, right? And you know this better than I do, Pete, because you used to be one. But some of the most valued colleagues and roles within in my past, working in technology in particular, have been project managers, right? Like, people can see, like, oh, here's your Gantt chart, here's your MS project file, you know, we just need to organize all that, and then everyone needs to do that, and here's your burn down, here's your scrum, Kanbans or whatever the hell it is you're using, and just stick stuff in there, do it, you know, get together and have conversations, blah blah blah. The mechanics that underlies the task of project management is pretty well understood, and you know, you can Six Sigma the shit out of it, or you can you can take a much more organic approach to it. None of that's particularly sophisticated, because the job of project management has nothing to do with technology, right? It's purely about communication, right? And communication between humans. And what a good project manager does is lubricate the gears of productivity by making sure that the difficult bits of communication are handled intelligently and in a structured way, and the human, the messy, the squishy elements of running a project that has real humans involved in it, is working in an efficient and harmonious way, right? It's closer to the job of a conductor for a classical orchestra, because if you didn't understand what a conductor does, you'd look at it and go, what the fuck is there a dude waving his hands around with a stick, right, in front of those people who are doing something useful, which is playing an instrument, right? It looks redundant, but without the conductor, that orchestra could not function, right? It would just be a horrible discordant noise. You can't remove the conductor from an orchestra, and the idea of removing project and program managers, I mean, some of them, let's be clear, are not very good at their job, but that's a problem of, you know, it's a skills issue, right? But you know, the project management is so vitally important, and it's not a job that can easily be automated. I would fundamentally support project managers using AI so they can do their job better. It frees them up to spend more time with the people, right? And doing the people shit, which is what the most important part of that role is. And I think that's the whole thing here. Like, you have machines emulating humans without understanding why humans are doing that, Because if that machine, if Claude really was that intelligent, it would have recognized that there was no value in it talking about going for a fucking walk in the mountains. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's not intelligent. It's just a simulacrum of an idea of a human. And it's not even that. It's just a fucking word predicting machine. It is miraculous that Claude and GPT can do what they do. Yeah. But what they do not do is create intelligent human-like entities.
Yeah. And I think it's this gap, which is, where we sit with things at the moment that is causing some consternation, and this is why we see it, and it's worth calling out, the gap being that you've got the leaders saying, oh, okay, well, what is it you can relate to? Oh, all right, C-3PO, that's a walking, talking robot. Oh, well, that's what I mean. Why say that? Well, because then we've got something common that we can imagine. The reality, being is that we're miles away from that. And so then when someone then says, okay, well, I'll just set off this agent and call it a human, of course it performs, probably way much better than anything it has done in the past, but still massively poorly. And you can see this as well, with this open Claude stuff that's been coming about, where it's like, okay, well, let's put an agent on in its own sandbox, be that a Mac Mini or a Linux machine, give it a bunch of tools and give it, total access, give it a little file to say what it is or what its objective might be. And I would argue that this is where the problem really starts, because someone says, okay, well, you're a software developer and you're looking to improve all open source code. And go and do your thing. Next thing you know, it's writing a whole load of code and pinging people, doing pull requests and saying, oh, you need to update the code. This is a really good bit of code. And then flaming them online when they're gatekeepers and saying they're not doing it, which was that open source example we saw. But again, it's people saying, okay, well, you've told me that this agent can do anything I want. I've now set that up to do anything it wants. It doesn't appear to be working. Now, I think as an experiment, I think that's quite good, but I think it does highlight the gap that you've got leaders talking at this kind of high level, this is where we'll be in 20, 30, 40 years. Oh, and here's the technology that will get you there. But the gap between where we are now and getting to that ultimate place, there's so many steps that need to happen along the way. It's just definitely misleading. And, it leaves us in this position where people think, oh, we should be able to do that. It's like, well, yeah, one day, not anytime soon.
Well, this is the thing. And I think it's the crux of this conversation, right? I don't know what, with our time machine, when we travel 10, 20, 30 years into the future, I don't know what we're going to see. Right. And I guarantee it's not whatever anything like anyone is saying right now. In fact, it's probably a post-nuclear hellscape, but or maybe everyone looks like Donald Trump. Who knows? But it's not really the conversation we're having. I'm not convinced about the long term projections of a lot of this stuff. But really, that's not what we're objecting to here. It's more the time scales and the urgency of the challenge and the idea that it's one thing some independent consultant, and I know people like this that are using something like OpenClaw to administrate their client base as a stopgap solution for managing, I've got these 50 customers, I've got conversations going on about payments and contractors, and I need to, chase up that bloody subcontractor or chase up that client because, they always leave the payment to the last minute and you have to keep badgering them. And so all of this stuff is eminently theoretically doable by an AI. And I have sympathy for someone trying to manage an environment like that, especially, they can't afford to hire someone, whose job it is to manage the machinery of a small business, of effectively a lone trader, consultant, right? Which is basically what you and me are, right? I mean, my my particular flavor of consultancy, I don't really have a lot of that type of stuff. But I can see people, especially if what they do is things like sales. I can see why. I've got a lot of sympathy for that. And so in a world where that technology works reliably, I think we're in, right? I think we might not be that far away from those people having a much easier life and actually being able to serve more clients, right? But I'm not convinced we are there, and I'm not convinced that the open claw revolution is like a month old. You've got Maltbook, and then you've got whatever it was called, Claudebot or something. I mean, we are talking about the last few months of last year and the first few months of this year, right? Yeah. Well, we're not even 6 weeks in, right? And so suddenly this thing is like, well, everyone's using it. Chatbots are chatting to each other. They've got it running on a little pseudo server underneath their desk, and it's out there doing all sorts of shit that they may not even be aware of. Is it interacting with their clients or whatever properly? Is it emailing their boss, and is it doing the right thing? Yes, maybe, but is it also building a bunch of accidents that are yet to happen? Are the people running this, and it's an open source software developed by one guy, it was entirely vibe coded by someone. I don't know if the person who created it has coding skills or not. I won't pass judgment on that, but as far as I'm aware, it was entirely coded by AI agents. So who knows what demons are in there?
Yeah.
And who knows what the various models are going to do when given access to the sorts of things that OpenClaw gets access to. Just given that all my experience with AI and AI agents is you have to babysit them, right? You have to, because they will do something nuts, right? And I can't fucking explain to you how many times I've gone on to, you know, my little Cato chat client after having done some fucking updates to it a couple of days ago, where it's backed out whole functionality sets.
Yeah.
Like, as part of a different change, it just switched shit off, right? And I'm going, but I did that. We fixed that. Here's the chat. Like, and then it did another thing, and now it switched off the thing we did before. And it's like, I didn't see that because I didn't need to do that particular function for like a couple of days, right? And so at which point are we at the point where, oh, that thing emailed your boss to tell you you've quit your job 3 days ago, it's already being processed by HR, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm only just discovering now because I've got the P45 through the post. It's like, I mean, it's a bit extreme. I can't see it quite, but like, you know, you get my point.
Yeah. Well, the whole sort of access to everything you have, you know, and the crossover of one file, one type of files into another, you know, personal into work, you know, could then you're in all sorts of trouble. Just one more thing I was kind of want to lean into as we kind of get to the end of this is the sort of redesign. I heard someone talking from Deloitte on the Practical AI podcast. She was quite good. She was talking, I suppose, a little bit more as a consultant would, you know, about the human impact of, you know, change and how we manage these things and what it means to redesign a workplace with AI in the mix and thinking about things like, you know, well, you can't redesign it the way you would have redesigned things, you know, even 10 to 15 years ago, because you'd be looking at things in a deterministic way. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, well, it isn't the case with dealing with AI as we currently have it. And I just thought that was, you know, that just in itself is quite interesting. And I think that there's definitely a role for, you know, redesigning with AI in the mix. And, you know, even using AI to help that redesign. But I do think it's a redesign. I don't think it's just, I'll throw these things in and let them run it for you. I think there's definitely a throw these things in as a trial and see what happens, and then take the findings from that and input that into a new redesign, which could be radically different from, you know, a process you have now. And I totally accept that. I think, you know, it's definitely where we should be going. I just don't think we should be expecting the experiment of throwing something into the mix to come up with the answer. I think it reveals some data and some findings, which I think we then should, you know, look to build on. I think that's definitely worth doing. But I just feel in that maybe it's the hype cycle, maybe it's the, you know, the fact that everyone's always looking for the next big thing, is that, you know, these experiments, as touted as the answer, I just think they're just a stepping stone and another little bit of information which helps us get to somewhere new. And it's good to have an open mind about that, but also don't be just too taking in. So I think there's definitely a role there for, you know, experimenting and seeing what new ways of doing things we can come up with. And I think some of that...
Well, I think there's a systematic rethinking of how we build software and businesses and stuff. I think that if you're thinking about it in the old paradigm where you... our web CMS is about a date, can't do the things we want to do, so, you know, we're going to migrate to a new one, or we evolve our software platform because it's, you know, in one state now and we need it to be in a different state, but we, you know, we can't afford a full redesign, so we'll evolve it rather than, you know, rebuild or whatever. And there's a few, you know, quite a few different approaches to updating and evolving and improving software, which should already start to feel really, really inappropriate, because in theory you can just tear it all down and start again and build it in a fraction of a time. And every time you learn how to do that and that process more and better, you know, why bother fucking migrating? Why not just rebuild every single bloody time? Why not have multiple versions of different software doing the same thing and figure out which is the best one? You know, like, I'm not suggesting that being able to basically vibe code your whole platform over and over again is a good way of doing things. It's just a way of illustrating that ultimately the whole way we think about software development is likely to change, and we will go into a mode of permanent optimization because we can, and permanent tear it down and start again because we can. That's going to come with its own problems for sure, but it's going to fundamentally upend the way that software development is done. And I think when people are talking about this, they're trying to say it in the vernacular of existing software paradigms, whereas the reality is that's all gone now, right? It's not gone, but there's no godly reason why you would continue that once you've figured out a more AI-focused way of doing it without blowing up your businesses. So, business is going to be able to do this quickly. If you're like a retailer or something, it's going to take a fuck a load longer for a bank to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was still knocking around with code from the 80s. So,
what we didn't get into, which I don't think we should, but we should come back to, is Zitron's been banging on about this one. The reason that the software Amazon and Microsoft and others took a hit was really this belief that companies can just build their own platforms using AI, which is a corollary to this last point, right? Which is not untrue, but building the software is the easy bit, right? Maintaining it and making sure that it functions as per spec and doesn't do completely terrible things, that's the hard and expensive bit, and it's why businesses pay third-party companies for software licenses. And so I think we need to drill down a bit on that, because in my mind it's one of the most salient points in this conversation and why people shouldn't be selling up their shares in, you know, Salesforce and stuff.
Indeed, yeah. Well, look forward to that one.
Yes, let's do it. Right, good. Well, that was fun putting the world to right. I don't think we did come up with a conclusion, did we? I think our conclusion for this, to the question, is AI going to replace your job, is maybe for certain jobs, but unlikely in the next 18 months for most jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's about the best we can say right now, and probably quite a lot longer.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say we're skeptical.
Skeptical. Watching brief, to use a horrible corporate term. Okay, good. Right, well, that'll do.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody, again for joining us.
And, yeah, see you again soon.
See ya. Bye.
Confusion matrix.